This episode is made possible by the generosity of our listeners. Thank you.
Live from the Florida Shindig, it's the Creation Science
for Kids
show. Now we get to the nitty-gritty of what wisdom helped God create. Heaven, sky, underground water, and ocean. Then it's on to the scariest and most fascinating denizens of the deep, sharks. Praise the Lord. I will give thanks to the Lord with my whole heart, in the company of the upright, in the congregation. Great are the works of the Lord, studied by all who delight in them. Full of splendor and majesty is his work, and his righteousness endures forever. He has caused his wondrous works to be remembered. The Lord is gracious and merciful. Psalm 111, verses 1 through 4. This is episode 80 of the podcast where we learn about Jesus, our creator, and his amazing world. Hi, I'm Sherry Fields, your host, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Timothy.
Hi.
To follow along with what we're looking at, check out the show notes, creationsciencethenumber4kids.com/compass or 080, and be sure to listen to the end for the punny science joke of the day. All right, so we're back in Proverbs 8, and we're at verses 27 through 29. Would you read those for us, please, Timothy?
When he prepared the heavens, I was there. When he set a compass upon the face of the depths, when he established the clouds above, when he strengthened the fountains of the deep, when he gave to the sea his decree that the waters should not pass his commandment.
Very good. Thank you, Timothy. Yeah, these verses. And do you remember who the I that was there? Do you remember what Proverbs 8 is talking about?
I forgot.
That's all right. So it's wisdom. And wisdom here in Proverbs is feminine, but we know what part of God is the clearest for showing wisdom. Who else do we think of? Do you know which part of the Trinity?
No.
Jesus. So these verses are some of my all-time favorites anywhere. So Jesus was there when God prepared the heavens. So what are the heavens?
The sky.
Mm-hmm. And what else? So you think about it. You've got a culture that's never been to outer space. They've never been higher than Mount Hermon would be the highest they'd ever gotten. So the sky. But they would also know that beyond where the birds were, there were things that were much further out. What do we call things that are in the much further out?
Stars.
Yeah, and even the sun and moon. So we call all of that. You need Stephen for this, don't you? Space.
Space.
Outer space. Yeah. Stephen's my nerd. He's 8-year-old and he's getting to go to Cape Canaveral and he's been going spaceship randomly all day for 3 weeks now. Okay. And then God prepared the heavens with wisdom. So that's everything above us. And when he set a compass upon the face of the depth. All right. So one of the things I wanted to do with this podcast, it's been, 2.5 years since we did the Flat Earth podcast. And one of the things that's changed back then, I was hearing from skeptics that would say, oh, you silly creationist, you must think the earth is flat. And I'd be like, come on, we know better than that. We knew that way back when. Now there's somebody goes to our church who's wanting to say the earth is flat. Things have changed real fast. That you've got a lot of believers who, because they distrust science, have decided that even NASA has been lying to us about the shape of the earth. By the way, I was wanting to ask a pilot, he's like, okay, what would you say to somebody? Because I would love to hear his answer. But I was also thinking, have you ever seen a picture of the edge of the earth or heard of anyone? Poor Bob, he fell off the edge of the earth last week and we're having a memorial service for him. I've never heard a flat earther who talks like that. So that's something, when it talks about a compass, have you ever used a compass, Timothy?
Yeah.
Yeah, what would you do with it?
I saw which way was north.
Yeah, that is a compass. That is not the kind of compass this is talking about. You have also used the other kind, not too often, but you use it in your math book.
I do?
Yes. It's got a pencil at one end, and it's got a point on the other, and you draw...
Oh, the circle.
Yes, that is the kind of compass talked about here. So the idea is that the face of the depth is circular. Now, flat earth people will say, well, that just means the earth is shaped like a plate. But when you take a picture of earth from outer space, you've seen those pictures. My favorite is where the moon is between the camera and earth, and you see how dark the moon is, like a tar road. But what shape is it on the picture?
Round, a sphere.
Well, you can't see that in a picture because the picture's flat. It's a?
Circle?
A circle. That's all it's talking about. I know I mentioned this in the other podcast. There is no Hebrew word for a ball, for a sphere. So when it talks about a circle, that you can't tell whether it's two-dimensional or three. But if you have a circle that's three-dimensional, like you take a square and you make it three-dimensional, you get a building block. If you take a circle and you make it three-dimensional, you get a?
Ball.
Ball. So the face of the depth. When God first created the world, and if you had looked at it, what color would it have been? Would have been all brown and green?
Blue.
Blue, because it was covered with?
Water.
So, and of course, the depth. I should have mentioned that, Timothy. Sorry. That is the ocean. And then God also established what? He established the
clouds.
The clouds above. What day does that sound like when he established? There was a ocean below, and then there were clouds above.
Day two.
Day two. Okay, now here's what I love. So there's a couple ideas on how the flood moved things around. The most common one is plate tectonics, where you've got, we know earthquakes are caused by things moving back and forth against each other, but you also, like on our map, you can see between Eastern North America and Europe and Africa how it curves, and both sides follow the same curve. It's really cool. So we want to figure that out, and there are the two ideas. So plate tectonics is one of them, and that's where you have to have huge sheets of the crust of the rock diving under others and turning into lava. There's another guy, Dr. Walt Brown, and I know I've mentioned him on the podcast a couple of times, but he's worth checking out. He does not think that's how it worked. He thinks that actually there was like a split of the seam, kind of like on a baseball, how it's got the different pieces of leather sewn together in different shapes, and that the whole rock slid apart at the seam in the middle of the Atlantic, slid over across this huge cushion of water, and that's a lot of the water that was coming up. He has this crazy idea that on day two, God formed the crust of the earth, and that instead of forming the clouds, and that the word there actually means crust of the earth. I think that's kind of bizarre, but I've never had trouble with his whole overall concept, because I know passages like Proverbs 8, where it talks about the fountains of the deep. And he, even here, it mentions that they were strengthened. So that's something Dr. Brown talks about. He thinks that they would have been huge subterranean pockets of water. I think he's got, because he's an engineer, huge mathematical equations, but that's something I don't get into because math isn't my specialty. But the idea that there would have been like pillars and supporting walls and stuff to keep them solid, and that's the way it was designed originally, very good, could have continued the system forever if Adam and Eve hadn't fell. So that's something that's his idea. And this kind of verse is one of the reasons that I think he's on the right track, is this, that God strengthened the fountains of the deep when he first created. But all of that is something we can't know, and we only get these little hints. So whatever somebody believes about the Bible, we can guess, but God will show us someday what he actually did. All right, now this last phrase. When he gave to the sea his decree that the waters should not pass his commandment. What did God promise Noah when they got off the ark? He would never
flood the entire earth again.
Right. So the way God has it, yes, the ocean level, we look at the ice age and it looks like it dropped at least 100 feet, possibly 300 feet with the amount of ice caught up on the continents. So that changed the water level quite a bit, but then it melted back. But has it ever covered the whole world again? No, there's a barrier. It's like God saying, okay, water, you're huge, you're powerful, you're scary, but you can only come up this high. I'm going to make sure there's plenty of dry land on the outside so there's enough room for animals and plants to live in. So this is a way of describing that in beautiful poetry. And his power. Can you tell the sea, okay, you can come to right up to this line, and then you must stop. You may not pass that.
Can always build something to stop.
Yes, we can. But can we keep the whole thing out? Most of the Netherlands would be underwater if we couldn't. But that's very flat land. Can we really change this the way God does everywhere on the whole planet?
No.
No, not anywhere close. So it's showing how huge God is. Oh, one of the things that I wanted to mention, I was listening to another favorite podcast of mine, the Steve Schramm Show. It's S-C-H-R-A-M-M is his last name. And you can find that on my webpage, creationscience4kids.com/creation-podcasts, I believe. Anyway, I'll have it in the show notes. He was talking about cosmic microwave background radiation and Dr. Danny Faulkner's. And one of the ideas that creationists have been throwing out that is a possibility on what, how God first created the world is that when he spread out the heavens with water above the heavens, if heavens includes outer space, you would have to have water that could somehow, enough water to actually matter beyond the whole visible universe. And I actually talked to him a couple of years ago. I was like, I have trouble swallowing that because of the vast amount. And he said, yeah, it would be like 2 light years across with the Earth in the middle, or even bigger than that. Can you imagine 2 light-year ball of water that huge? I don't know. We are not entirely sure what God's talking about, but it sure blows our mind. So all these things that wisdom is talking about, they aren't things that we can do. We can barely even imagine them. And I think that is what's going on. Why, when Proverbs 8, the God through Solomon here is trying to tell us how amazing God is and how wise he is, he was going, pulling out all the stops, telling us the most amazing things about what God is. And that's one of the reasons I love science so much, is because it helps me to just think, wow, I'm small. God is big. He can draw a circle around the face of the earth. I have trouble even picturing how big the earth is. He can set things up deep down in the earth that are strong and could stand. He establishes the clouds. He can do all these things. He is God. I am not. I am wise to listen to him when he says, this is wisdom. So now it's time to hear from you. What do you have for us today, Timothy?
Sharks. Sharks look kind of like a torpedo fish, but they're not fish because their skin is rough, like kind of like sandpaper, and they don't have any scales. They don't have real bones. They have cartilage skeleton.
Okay. So what's your skeleton like? Do you have a cartilage skeleton?
No. I would flop around.
Now, you do have some cartilage, because actually, this is something I didn't think of when we were planning this. Babies, when they're growing inside their mom, do start out with cartilage. And then it gets calcified around the cartilage. Did you know that? So we start out that way. That would be one of the things they would use to try to say we were fish once upon a time and we're going through the evolution. But even today, you still have cartilage. Where can people feel their cartilage so they know what it would feel like to have?
Their nose and their ears.
Right. Your whole ear is still cartilage, which is, so it's kind of, it's tough and it's got the same shape, but it doesn't have the hard calcium in it.
Right. Most sharks have a dorsal fin that looks like a rectangle. Triangle that kind of looks like a pyramid.
Mm-hmm. Where?
On the top of their back.
Yeah, on their back. Yeah, so when you're playing swimming and you want to scare your friends,
just get a shark suit.
Or all you need is that fin sticking out of the water, like the great white. Yeah, I used to do that with my hands. Never scared anybody, but it was fun.
Sharks are very different from each other. For example, The biggest shark still alive is the whale shark.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a deep sea shark, and there are sharks that can walk on their fins.
Mm-hmm. Now, are the whale sharks the biggest ones that have ever been?
No.
How do we know?
Because we found teeth that are the biggest one is 7 inches.
Whoa.
And it's about the size of your hand.
Okay. And they just found it by the ocean?
No. They found fossil teeth.
Right. So what do they call that kind of shark that's extinct now?
Megalodon.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember what that means?
Big tooth.
Yeah, very practical name, scientists. All right, so what do we guess? Because we haven't actually found their whole body, so we have to do a lot of guessing. But if they are shaped, because their teeth look kind of like which one that's alive today?
The great white shark.
Right, so if you had a great white that had the same size tooth, how long would it be?
Over 40 feet.
Which is?
Which is 12 meters long.
Yeah. Okay, so that's a pretty cool shark, but we can't see it. What's one that's really cool that we can see?
The whale shark. It's giant.
Uh-huh. Like how big?
The length of a school bus.
Which is?
Which is 32 feet or 8 to 10 meters.
Yeah, now this is one. We were looking this up in a National Geographic book, and it had a mistake. It was trying to tell us it was 8 to 10 feet. They had mixed up their meters and feet. It's like, wait a minute. Whale sharks are bigger than that. I've seen them swimming with. So we looked it up somewhere else, and it was a typo. All right. So where do they live?
They live around the world in tropical places.
Yep, anywhere that it's warm enough for them. And are they scary? Are they going to eat you for lunch?
No.
Why?
They eat plankton.
Mm-hmm.
And shrimp.
Yeah, so when I was a girl, I liked to study about sea creatures, but I did not know till I was a grown-up what plankton was. So what kinds of things are plankton?
Shrimp, baby animals, mm-hmm. Squid. Jellyfish.
Yeah, and there are also, I didn't write it down, but there's some plankton that are kinds of plants that they have photosynthesis. But they're all these tiny creatures making this sort of soupy stuff. And how does a giant shark eat something that's so small we need microscopes to see them properly?
They suck the water in with filter or pads.
Yeah. Do you remember? I read that to you. I thought it was so cool. Do you remember how that worked with their filter pads?
They trap the plankton and other stuff.
Right. So I was explaining to you that it's kind of like when I use a vacuum cleaner, I have to clean out the filter. You've got the big part that collects the big stuff, but then once a month you're supposed to clean out the air filter that catches all the dust. And it's kind of like that, where the water kind of flows alongside, and so that they're not likely to, the part that's sucking in doesn't get clogged up with the plankton, but they can still collect it and force the water back out. And the water, do they spit the water out their mouth?
No, they force it through their gills.
Their gills. And then they need their gills to not get clogged up. So they actually have, what will they do sometimes when stuff does get clogged? I didn't write it down, did I? They cough. But even Wikipedia, because this is where I found this depth of information, it called it extremely efficient how they got the water to flow past the filter pads without clogging up and still collecting the food. Even they have to admit it was really well designed. Who designed them?
God.
Yeah. Now, something else that was really cool about the whale sharks is we saw a picture of their teeth. Do you remember what it looked like? They were in all these rows, like 15 rows, and you've got like 400 teeth all around. There are small teeth in the, it's almost like looking at a close-up of the pokey side of Velcro. But they don't use it for anything that we know of. So, of course, what do the evolutionists say about those teeth? Do you know what they call things that aren't used anymore, but they assume used to be useful?
I don't know.
Vestigial. Now, none of us know what they're used for. But my guess is if we study whale sharks long enough and we're smart enough to say, wait a minute, it probably has a good reason, I bet God would help us see why he gave whale sharks teeth, because he didn't just make a mistake and say, well, I did all the other whales with, or sharks with teeth, I'll give them teeth too, even though they'll just waste a lot of resources. And It is possible that they used to be useful for something when they were new, but not likely considering its teeth. What would they do with it? So I bet someday we will know what those teeth are for, but we don't yet. But that's the kind of thing evolutionists and creationists make predictions about what we will find in the future. Creation tends to say we will find it's useful and good and was well designed. Evolutionists have to say, well, it probably isn't useful anymore and it was probably poorly designed. And guess who usually is right when we find something new out?
The creationists.
We sure are. We are constantly finding out how well designed everything is. Okay, now what about that deep sea one?
The frilled shark.
Mm-hmm. What's it look like? Does it look like a whale, great white shark?
No, it kind of looks like an eel.
Uh-huh.
Which is a really creepy face.
Yeah, and its teeth. Did you see how it kind of has its teeth poking out?
Mm-hmm.
And I
it's like its teeth are coming out of its mouth to clamp on you and then and go back.
Yeah, and they weren't ordinary looking teeth. Like you think of a shark, you usually think of that triangle. These they actually have three spikes, so I thought they looked almost furry, like they had a whole bunch of spikes coming out of them. What do evolutionists say about how long these sharks have been around?
Early prehistoric.
Mm-hmm. And, okay, so this is something else. I love the Nautilus. It's on the design of my website and stuff. Nautilus are also considered very early. Where do they live now?
I don't know.
Where does the frilled shark live?
In the deep sea.
In the deep sea. Nautiluses, they do come up at night to feed, but they live way down deep, like 4,000 feet over, like 1,200 meters. They live way down deep. So when the evolutionists are saying early prehistoric, we flood geologists people, we hear deep. And they still live deep, so of course we're going to find them in deeper rocks. Doesn't that make sense?
Yes.
All right, now for the last shark. It's called the?
Epaulette shark.
Yeah, does it have fancy pads on its shoulders?
No.
Why did they name it the epaulette?
Because of the spots.
It has dark spots behind its fin, so they thought it looked kind of like epaulettes. It's kind of a pretty basic-looking shark. Not too big. Okay.
It lives near Australia. It lives in tide pools.
Yeah. So what does it have cool? Because it's not swimming out in the ocean open ocean like a great white. What's different about the way God designed it?
It likes to push itself with its fins on the bottom of the ocean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw that even if it could swim, if it's got enough deep enough water to swim in, it still likes to push along the bottom. And how does it move? Does it walk like us?
No. It's kind of like a snake, but walking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw one that compared it to how a salamander twists its whole body left and right. And then its fins.
They're extra flexible.
Mm-hmm. So
it can push off better.
Mm-hmm.
It can walk on land and get into the nether pool.
Right. So there'd be another reason God gave it those cool fins. All right. Now, there's a problem with tide pools. What happens to it when these sharks are nocturnal? And what can happen to tide pools when the sun isn't stirring the water?
It can get low oxygen.
Mm-hmm. So why doesn't the epaulette shark die each night?
It can shut down parts of its body to survive.
Uh-huh.
Without oxygen.
Yeah. Yeah, I read scientists, they wanted to find out just how long it could survive. So they managed to get some water with zero oxygen in it, and they stuck the poor epaulette shark in there and watched to see how long it lived.
One hour.
And it lived for an hour. It's like, poor shark. But it's kind of hard to study otherwise. So, what do you think about sharks?
They're cool and scary.
Are you glad God made them?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is one of the things, now I'll add that all the things that clean up, whether they're vultures or bacteria or we need things to clean up the dead and the dying things in our world badly. Otherwise, there would be a huge extra amount of sickness. And so we need sharks to help take care of the sick things, to clean up the messes. And they're very important for the environment and the ecosystem. Did God know that?
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you, Timothy.
Dr. Don't forget, you can find links to all the things we've talked about today by visiting the show notes page, creationsciencethenumber4kids.com/compass, to let your friends know about this podcast and ministry.
And to connect with all the rest of the things we do with the podcast, stop by the web address I got just for you, cs4ks, the initials of this show, .com, and find out how to send us your own recording. Write us an Apple Podcast review, drop us a note, become a monthly supporter, and see the heart of why this ministry is so important. Okay, here's a joke. What kind of lighting did Noah have on the ark?
I don't know.
Flood lights.
Well, this finishes up our show for today. Until next time, have fun treasuring our amazing universe and creator.
Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for thou hast created all things, and for thy pleasure they are and were created. Revelation 4:11.